As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
James, guess what?
I don't know. What?
The trade deadline has passed.
Oh, man. I didn't even notice. Like, did the Leafs do anything?
No. Nothing of note.
Just quiet. Just one blockbuster deal with Calgary? The Dryden Hunt extravaganza?
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to dig too deep into that one unless you want to do a deep dive on the prospect they got back.
He's not really a prospect. Isn't he like 30 years old? I don't think he's a prospect.
Minor leaguer. Okay.
Radim, let's talk about... Radim, can you pronounce his last name? Zahorna?
Yeah, that was pretty good, actually.
I did it.
So very good job. So we have a lot of questions to get to. We want to dig into some of the trades that
half
we
of them
did
are
not
about
talk about.
Radim Zahorna, I got to tell you. So you better bone up on his play. I thought it was funny that Dubé said we got him because we wanted another center. It's like, how many centers do you need?
They're scarred. They saw what happens when you have centers, and now they just want everyone to come play center.
Well, and the other thing Dubé said in that same answer was like, you can never have enough centers and defensemen and goalies. He's like, so the only thing you have a lot of is wingers. But anyway, I digress.
Okay, so we have not talked since the trades for Luke Shen.
I talk to you every day.
Well, you and I have talked about it, but we've not talked about it on the podcast. Our last podcast we recorded after the Leafs.
Monday night.
Was it after? Yeah, it was after the Leafs traded for Jake McCabe and Sam Lafferty.
Well, we were like, oh, this will be perfect. It'll be a quiet day tomorrow, and then we'll do the show. It'll hold up until the end of the week, and they'll make their other moves on the deadline day, and we're golden. And then...
And then boom!
And then there was a trade-gasm on Tuesday. I was in the air. So I was on my flight, and we were about to take off, and the last tweet that I got a notification for before I took off was your tweet, and it said, they're pulling Rasmus Sandin off the ice, or whatever, however you worded it.
Yeah.
So then I was up in the air, and I didn't know what had happened to Rasmus Sandin. I assumed he had been traded, but I had to sit with that thought for 45 minutes while my flight. And then when I landed, it was like, Sandin's been traded, and the Leafs got Luke Shen, and Pierre Engvall's been traded, and they all happened like all in really quick succession.
Well, I was at practice, and it was one of the more unusual experiences that I've had covering this team. Like, so Sandin gets pulled off the ice, and like that almost never happens. Like, usually if you're going to trade a guy, he gets traded, he doesn't practice, whatever.
I don't think I've seen that covering the... Have you seen it covering the Leafs? I'm not sure if I have.
I feel like I have seen it. Like, I feel like I have. I just can't remember.
Was it Matt Lombardi, maybe? I feel like...
It could have been someone in that department, like someone like that.
Yeah.
But so then what happens is obviously practice finishes and players are just coming off the ice and they're asking us like, what happened with the trades? And they're just all like kind of buzzing around. And all you see in the background near their dressing room is just Kyle Dubas on the phone like the entire time.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, they just traded Rasmus Sandin. Obviously, you find that out. And it's like, they're going to trade. Was the Engvall trade first? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. It felt like they were
whatever.
All, I mean, I was like getting off my flight and going through customs and stuff.
Well, so then the Engvall trade happens and the Shen trade happens and you're kind of just thinking like, how many more things are they going to do? Like, we were expecting that maybe they could add one more defenseman, but then they end up adding two. So obviously you've got six new players, but I think we should start. Where do you want to start? Let me leave it up to you because we obviously want to get into the Shen trade. We want to get into the Sandin trade. We can talk a bit about Engvall. Your guys,
yeah, I think we should go Zahorna. I think we should go down the if people can listen to the other shows to hear about like what we thought about the O'Reilly trade and what we thought about the McCabe trade. Like go back and you know
that's
listen
old
to
news.
Our. Listen to our amazing archive. I think we should just go through. I mean, I think the most interesting one is Sandin. I think that's
let's start there. I agree.
Because Engvall is cap, like dumping the cap. We did talk about that last show because that's who we thought they would get rid of. Shen, we've been talking about. I mean, he was in our story last weekend where we said they were targeting Shen. And, you know, despite the skepticism and the complaints that we got about writing that story, like that's what happened. They were looking at McCabe and Shen. The one that surprised Engvall going didn't surprise me. Shen coming didn't surprise me. Both of those things make sense, and we knew that was going to happen, or we thought something like that was going to happen. Sandin, I didn't see. And, you and I had talked about it, and I had gone and...
You disagreed with me.
Well, you know why? Because I talked to a bunch of people around the league about him. Because it made sense if they were looking to add all these defensemen. Certainly, if we knew for sure they were adding two or more defensemen, he was going to be going. I thought they were going to add one. Like, I thought they were going to add McCabe, and then Sandin was going to be the odd man out. So I started talking to other teams, started talking to agents, people around the league. Like, what do you think? Do you think the Leafs could trade Sandin? And I got the response I got back was the same across the board, was that they thought that was more like a summer trade because they weren't going to be able to get back what they wanted for Sandin. You know, one person I talked to said, Kyle drafted Sandin in 2018, 5 years ago, with a first round pick.
First round pick.
Yeah. And they said, you know what? It'd be a bad look for him to trade Sandin for whatever, a late second or a third round pick or something now. Like, it just wouldn't look good. And this person didn't think they would get a first round pick. But, the trade they made, not only did they get a first round pick, they also got Erik Gustafsson. Do you remember, Jonas, like, it wasn't on the show, but you and I had discussed Sandin to Washington. Would Washington want Sandin?
I think we were talking about that just because we were
Orlov.
Talking about Orlov.
Yeah, well, we thought they should try and get Orlov. And we're like, well, if Washington would want... And then I think I said, I don't think Washington would want Sandin. And like, we had this whole conversation and... It just goes to show, I had talked to like four or five people about Sandin, and I think I bought too heavily into what people were telling me, and they didn't really 100% know what was happening. And I wonder do you think, Jonas, that if they would have only gotten one of McCabe or Shen, if they would have kept Sandin as kind of like an extra guy?
I guess if you're only getting, just getting Shen, I don't know what that would have.
Well,
I don't know. That's like,
I thought
that's
they were only getting one
question.
Of them. I thought it was one or the other. I thought they were looking for, you know, some physicality and whatever. But then when you think about it, it's like, you know, Shen's going to be more of a depth guy and McCabe's going to be in the top four and on a shutdown pair. So they are filling slightly different roles. I don't think anyone realized the Leafs were going to bring in six players. Like, I think that's, like, if you look at the pieces we were writing in the lead up, we thought maybe two or three, because that's normally what happens. But kind of the whole league went a bit crazy. Like, look how many trades have happened. You know, normally on the Athletic site, we do trade grades at the deadline. I think last year we did 11 or something. And this year it's been like, I don't know what we did, like 25 or something ridiculous. Like, there's been so many high impact trades this year.
Yeah, and a lot of them obviously take place well before the deadline, which made the deadline day very uninteresting. Like, what was the best trade? I was trying to think, like,
it was the most interesting trade. Klingberg was like the biggest trade today.
The biggest. He's like,
he hasn't been good. And he got traded for a fourth round pick. So, like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a flyer by Minnesota, like, that, you know, they can play him on the power play maybe.
But so let's dig into the Sandin thing a little bit more, just because I think it's understandable for anyone to look at that and be like, they're trading like Sandin. He's like 22 and like he was a first round pick, like you mentioned. Obviously, he's talented. A lot of the underlying numbers are really positive with him. But like, you look ahead to their future, obviously beyond the season, you look at their future this season. He wasn't going to be in their playoff lineup unless there were a lot of injuries. And then you look ahead to like next year, they just traded for Jake McCabe, who signed. Morgan Riley's in your top four. It's not clear, like we discussed last week, that it's not clear. I don't think there's any evidence to this point that he can play in the top four of a contender. They're trying to contend.
The Leafs certainly don't think so.
So I don't know. It's not surprising to me just because it's something I've thought about for a long time, but I can understand why there would be some surprise to it. But when you think about it, it's not really that surprising. So why are they upset?
Well, because they like Sandin. They think he's a good player.
And he is a good player.
And you're a contender and he doesn't make a lot of money. And why would you need a late first round pick? That's the basic explanation.
It boils down to fit and playoffs. Like, it's just really hard when you have, like, even if you think he's going to be a top four defenseman one day, you have Riley signed forever, right? There's not really a way to construct a top four that can work when you have Riley and Sandin on two separate pairs. Like, it just,
and Liljegren really too, right? Like, you know, like smaller skilled types.
Yeah. And so, like, I just thought, like, I wrote last month, or what month is this? This is March. So, yeah, in February, like, if you can't play him in the playoffs now, like, what are you doing? Like, what, there's not, you may as well, if you can get a first round pick back, I just think that's obvious for them. That it makes a lot of sense. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Those things are true, but I think also it wouldn't surprise me, and I don't have any inside knowledge on this. It wouldn't surprise me if Sandin requested a trade. Like, I don't think that that's something that the agent would put out there, but like, I don't think he was happy in Toronto. Like, I don't think he wanted to stay.
I think,
he wanted to stay if he was going to play a lot. He was not going to be, like, if they put him as the seventh D for, like, you know, 15 of the last 20 games, he wasn't going to be in a good frame of mind to potentially play if there was an injury.
Well, and what we do know, James, is like, there has been a history there of things not always being smooth. I mean, last summer, like, the contract didn't get done until like a week into camp. There were situations in the past where he wasn't thrilled with, you know, lack of playing time and things along those lines.
There was a disconnect there where he felt like he deserved more opportunity and the Leafs didn't. And now he's going to get it somewhere else. I mean, it happens.
What do you make of Kyle Dubas mentioned that they could have taken back a second draft pick in that trade, but instead decided they'd rather have Gustafson for more depth in the playoffs?
Yeah, well, the explanation that I heard, he said it was about having someone that can play in the power play, right? Like, I guess if they're thinking if Riley's hurt or something, if they don't, like, then all of a sudden they're kind of scrambling for who to play in the power play, do you think?
I mean, they have Giordano. Liljegren has played a bunch on their second power play. But yeah, like, I mean, in terms of like someone who you could plug into your lineup in a playoff game, and I don't know. Like, I don't know that it doesn't totally pass the smell test that you're like, you're just trading for this guy just in case you need him on your power play to play 10 minutes. Like, I don't know. I do think it makes some sense to have another guy who's experienced, can play both sides. He's not like small. He's not big, but he's not small. I don't know. Like, you just trust him. This is a point you made to me and in our story, is you just push Connor Timmins down the depth chart another round.
Well,
so like, Connor, if you Timmins ever got to a situation, right?
He ain't playing in the playoffs, right? So right. That's part exactly. of why I thought they would keep Sandin, is because they didn't want Timmins to play in the playoffs. You're likely going to have an injury or two in the playoffs, especially if you play, you know, for a month or more, which the Leafs hope to. So you need at least seven guys you really trust. And now they have 9D. Yeah. It's very unusual to see a 23-man roster in the NHL that has 9 defensemen in it, because if you have 9 defensemen, you're at the minimum forwards and the minimum goalies, and you're using all 3 of your extra slots for defensemen, which is, I don't know if I've seen it before.
I do not know if I've seen it before. And Kyle Dubas said, you know, that you'd rather just have more guys. And there was a situation he pointed to this year where they had like Brody, Muzzin, Riley, all their, like every defenseman except like Giordano and Hall were hurt at one point or another. I think, am I right? Giordano's the only one to play every game. So you just want more guys. And so like Luke Shen, let's talk a little bit about Luke Shen coming back to Toronto. First off, it's a cool story. I mean, I was here when he was first drafted, and it's just funny, like, seeing him again and seeing him around the dressing room, and it's like
makes me feel old, Jonas, to see. Like,
it doesn't make me feel old. I don't know. It's a cool story on that front, but
it's like 15 years later, right? Since like his first year, he was 18, and now he's 33 years old. Like, it's incredible.
It's incredible, and I mean, the fit makes sense. Like, the physicality that he brings, the different dimension that he brings, the fact that, you know, he's played in the playoffs, he's won cups. Like, he's obviously a popular player in the league. I don't know. Like, I don't really see any downside to it. And obviously, for every fan who watched him in those early days, like, I'm sure there's tons of nostalgic feelings right now, right?
Well, I think he's kind of filling like the Lyubushkin kind of role, right? Like, he's not going to play. Like, I think he only played 10 minutes in Calgary, right? And I know they had 7 defensemen, but I don't think people shouldn't expect that Shen's going to play like, you know, top 4, you know, 20 minutes in the playoffs. Like, he's going to be a 6-7 guy who might come in and out of the lineup and be totally fine with that.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a disconnect as to like what his role has been in the playoffs. Like, he was, like you're mentioning, like when those back-to-back cups with Tampa, he was scratched a bunch. And when he did play, he was playing like 9 minutes, some minute, like 1 year he played, I think he averaged 9 minutes. The other year he averaged 11 minutes. But like you said, like, you can just kind of plug him in. And I don't know, James, I think one of the problems that they have, maybe it's not a problem, maybe that's not the right word, just something that they're going to have to figure out.
Dilemma.
Who do you play with Morgan Riley? Because if you're going to play TJ Brody with Jake McCabe, which is like,
that is a problem, Jonas.
It is. Okay. So maybe it's a problem, because I don't think that there's like an obvious solution. If you want to play Brody with McCabe, which I understand, you're trying to basically replicate what you had last year with Muzzin and Brody in the playoffs. Those two are excellent. So you want to play those two together. Then the question becomes, okay, well, who do you play with Riley? And I don't think that there's like really a great answer. Like, what would you do?
What would James do?
That should be a segment on the podcast.
We need some music for it or something. What would James do? I think you have to play one of Brody or McCabe with Riley. I know why they're doing it, but I don't think that there's I think one or the other, and I don't know how comfortable McCabe is on the right side. So, that's my answer. I think one of Brody or McCabe probably has to play with Riley. Or Jonas, you got to like shelter Riley a lot more than they do.
Well, so I kind of think that's where I am leaning today. We'll see what happens. We'll see how many different combinations they end up looking at. That's kind of where I would go. I would kind of, you mentioned Lyubushkin. I mean, Lyubushkin, they weren't, well, I guess when the pairs all shook out, they probably were. But that's kind of what I do. I might play Shen with Riley and play Shen not a ton, move Riley around, shelter him. That's kind of where I'm leaning, because we know, like, we have enough evidence by now that Hall doesn't fit with Riley. Liljegren doesn't fit with Riley. I don't know what else you're supposed to do. I mean, besides doing what you're saying, putting Brody or McCabe, and then it's like, okay, well, what are the reverberations on the rest of the lineup then? Because, like, suddenly it's like, well, is it going to be McCabe and Hall playing top lines in the playoffs? Are you good with that?
Yeah.
Maybe, James, you say, you know what? More, let's go with Riley and Brody. Like, that's our top pair. We're going to use them against top lines. And,
well,
hopefully,
I mean,
that's
you
good
probably
enough.
Want,
I don't know.
You probably want two pairs that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes. Any Giordano pair
last time
is now.
When they got McCabe, we got into this last time, right? Like, I think we're doing who's on first again with the D. I mean, it's.
I don't think we've talked enough about that specific thing, that there is not a perfect fit for Riley. So.
Well, there's not. Yeah, there's not like perfect pairs in general on the team, right? Like, it's, you know, if you feel good about all of these pairs being depth pairs, but which one you don't feel great about. You know, it's interesting though, like the Leafs have had a good year defensively. Like, they've, you know, they've haven't, you know, as a collective team, they've been good defensively. But it's interesting that we're this late in the year and there's not like you feel really good about Giordano and Liljegren, right? Like
I don't feel as good about that as consensus. Wow. Their defensive numbers are not as. I like Giordano Hall better than I do that. But anyway,
do you think Liljegren's going to be the odd man out here?
I think it's conceivable. I don't think you should be shocked if that's the case. Like, I wrote in my story from Edmonton, which was not a good game for the Leafs, obviously, that I kind of think, like, when the chips are down, that would be the lineup that I would dress. Riley, Shen, McCabe, Brody, Giordano Hall. Like, those are the six that I would trust the most. And obviously, Shen, you're not going to be able to, you're not playing that much. But I just trust all six guys. Yeah.
That seems to be the way that Keefe is leaning. Yeah. Yeah. And again,
we'll,
I mean, there's going to be a lot of criticism from the fan base if that's the way it plays out with the season that Liljegren has had.
It's going to be a competition between him and Hall down the stretch, I think. And to a lesser degree, Shen. I think you know what Shen is and they know what Shen is. But I think whichever of those guys plays better down the stretch will play at the start of the playoffs. And like we saw that last year, Liljegren won the starting spot in the playoff lineup, played two games, didn't play particularly well. And Justin Hall went in and played the rest of the way. So we'll see.
Why don't we put a pin in?
Break?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's take a break. We still have to get some questions. I do want to talk a teensy bit, a little bit about Engvall getting traded, just to kind of close the chapter there. So let's take a break and dig into that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, the biggest trade of the day. Dryden Hunt is no longer a Leaf.
Radim Zahorna. Now a Marley.
So what did I have written down here? Engvall. We're not really surprised. Like, we talked about that on the last podcast, that if you're choosing between Engvall and Kerfoot, you choose Kerfoot. But it's just such a funny tenure he had in Toronto. Like, he always just kind of left you wanting more. And I think that's how I'll remember Pierre Engvall.
The Engvall is closed, Jonas.
Open in New Jersey.
He went to the Islanders.
Yeah, sorry. I'm thinking about Lou, because Lou's going to sign him to some crazy contract.
Yeah, he probably will stay there. I saw someone tweeted something like, "If imagine the Islanders make the playoffs and they play the Bruins in the first round, and Engvall's like one of the deciding factors in knocking off the Bruins." I think the chances of that are probably pretty low.
Pretty low.
I always liked Engvall. I liked him. I remember that one training camp when he played really well, and talking to him and kind of writing about his life story, and like he seemed like a good person. Kind of like a gentle giant, you know, and I think that the gentleness is part of why they were ready to move on from him in the playoffs. You know, I think they were, you wrote about this earlier this week, that they're trying to like really playoffify their lineup and really toughen it up. And, you know, all six of the guys, I believe, I mean, I guess not Gustafson, but I was going to say five of the six guys that they brought in are physical and, you know, kind of in your face players. And that's what they're trying to do with the lineup.
Yeah, the word that I'm like keep coming back to is competitive. And like you just wanted, I don't know why, James. I think I mentioned
flashbacks this to like Randy Carlyle saying compete all the time, though, when you say competitive.
Compete level?
No, so like all the time, like every time they lost, it was like we didn't compete every single time.
The coaching was great, but he just didn't compete. No, like I always, I don't know why that line stuck in my mind, but during one of the Lightning's run to the cup, maybe it was the first one.
Like Sandin's competitive.
Very competitive. He's just not particularly strong. Like he's just not that big.
Yeah.
But John Cooper talked about like his third liners, and he just said like they basically like he said something along the lines of they have like a lot of grease under their fingernails and like they're just kind of like grimy kind of players. And that always stuck with me because that always felt like what the Leafs were lacking in. They were lacking in like Blake Coleman-y type players, guys who were just like kind of pains in the ass. And like it always felt like they were a little bit lacking in that.
Yeah. Yeah, like a little bit more white collar or something, or I don't know if like the
Yeah, like they were almost like a little bit, they weren't enough blue collar. And now you look at the bottom of their lineup and it's like, I think of like Boston, I think of Pittsburgh as teams that always kind of build their teams in this blue collar kind of fashion. And you look like Lafferty is a former Penguin, Chari is a former Bruin, Aston Reese started his career in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
So
like they've just, you know, like they've just added a bit more identity that way that they've lacked at times. And like, It's funny, like you think of what's happened to this team in the playoffs, and basically Kyle Dubas has said this, like they didn't want that to happen again, where they didn't have that extra push.
Well, Engvall has 4 points, no goals in 17 playoff games. I mean, he's a good player in a lot of respects, like, and he came a long way while he was with the Leafs, but I can see, you know, you've lost a bunch of series, you know. Do you really want to go back into battle with a guy that you failed with multiple times already? And I can see why they didn't want to.
And a guy who doesn't have that always, like his engine isn't always like his motor or whatever term you want to use. Like he doesn't always have that to him. Mm-hmm. So now you've replaced him. Like I was looking at, I just wrote a little bit about what they've done since the beginning of the year. And it's like, they basically exchanged Abe, Kubel, and Engvall for Achari and Lafferty. And like those are stylistically, like they're just different. Like Abe Kubel was supposed to be physical. That was what he was supposed to bring. He just never fit in here, obviously, and they got rid of him quick. I just think they've changed kind of their identity a bit. So anyway, let's get to some questions. Is there anything else we were supposed to hit? I mean, they didn't trade for a goalie.
Yeah. Did you think they were, and Matt Murray's going to play in Vancouver. Maybe we can just touch really quickly, Jonas, on the two games that they've played with some of the new guys. Like, I think that's worth doing. Full disclosure, I didn't see a ton of the Calgary game just with like deadline preparation and everything that's been going on. You and I have both been traveling and doing some different things this week. So, you were at the game. I'd be curious, like Edmonton game I did see, and it was a complete disaster and they were brutal. That might've been one of their worst games of the year, maybe their worst game of the year. They were awful.
They were bad.
It wasn't on Samsonov. Like they were.
He wasn't great either. As Randy Carlyle would say, he fit in with the rest of the team. Was that Randy? Or yeah, Randy Carlyle. I think
he was. He was just okay. So the Calgary game, though, like, what was your takeaway from that one? Like, you know, low scoring, hard fought. Sheldon Keefe seemed really happy with the kind of, especially the second half of the game. What was your takeaway?
Yeah, what's interesting in the start of the game, like they just looked disjointed and they looked like a team that was incorporating all these new players. They dressed 11. Yeah, right. Like, and they dressed 11-7, which is something I absolutely hate. I don't get why teams do it. I understand in this case why they did it. They wanted to get the two new defensemen in, but it just created all this kind of, there was no continuity to anything that they were doing because every time one line went out there, it wasn't out there the next group because they had to mix things up. But the second half of the game, I thought Matthews and Marner really got going and started to look like Matthews and Marner did last year, which we really have not seen at all. And Matthews like was really aggressive shooting the puck. Marner was really aggressive shooting the puck. And then the third period, once they got the lead, they just like shut it down. And like you can see, it's funny, like Keith was like beaming after the game. I just think he felt like that was an embodiment of what the new types of players that they brought in could do in a game like that.
Yeah.
Where we've seen, I mean, that Buffalo game, when was that? I don't even remember. But where they're up 5-0 and then it just kind of melts away. And obviously, like, they had O'Reilly and Achari by that point. But you could just kind of feel, like, what happens when you have those types of players on your team. And, like, you look at the ice time. Like, O'Reilly played 19.5 minutes. Tavares played 15:55. Like, it's just, there's just different options for Keith in a situation like that than before.
So, because they had seven defensemen, it's kind of interesting to look at and it was a tight game, and it was, you know, Calgary was a desperate team. They're really in one right now, and they're struggling. It's interesting to look at the minutes. Riley plays 18. Brody plays almost 24 minutes. Gustafson played 9:52. Hall played 17 minutes, so basically third pair of minutes. McCabe had just over 20 minutes. Shen played just over 10 minutes. Is that everybody? Did I miss somebody? I think that's everybody. You know, it's an interesting distribution where, you know, lean heavily on Brody, cut Riley back a little bit, lean heavily on McCabe, cut, Giordano, 1646.
That's one of the ones I'm watching, James, pretty closely.
I think that makes sense, right? Like, I think that kind of minute distribution is probably, you know, the third pair doesn't play as much as it has been this season. And then you lean a bit more on Brody and McCabe, and it's interesting.
That's probably a bit low. Like, Riley's not going to play that little.
No.
But...
Well, it depends how many power plays there are and things like that, right? Like, I wonder, do you think will they use Riley less on the PK now that they've got the makeup
Well, they really don't use him. They try not to use him generally. Like when they're healthy, he's like the fifth option. And now, depending on which guys, so these are the guys that for sure are ahead of him: McCabe, Brody, Hall, 100%. Giordano, 100%. And then, like, if Shen is in the lineup, like he was in Calgary, he'll take those penalty killing minutes. Mm-hmm. So you look in the Calgary game, Riley didn't play anything on the penalty kill. So, like, those are, like, the little reverberations that happen from some of these changes.
Did you notice anything with Gustafson in the game? I mean, he didn't play a lot, but did anything stand out with him?
He's fine. Like, he can move the puck. Like, you can see that. Obviously, he has the error on the first goal against at the blue line. But he's fine.
Do you remember him playing for Montreal when they had their playoff run a couple years ago? Like, he was one of
their bit, because I remember wasn't there some sort of controversy with him? He was playing ahead of someone. I can't remember who it was. I think it was one of their younger defensemen. He was in the lineup, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. I remember earlier this year, he had the hat trick against the Leafs.
Well, he's had like 2 years where he's put up tons of points, and then a whole bunch of other years where, like, so that Montreal team was not
good
stacked, and he was only playing like 10 minutes a game on that team. So, but then, you know, he goes to Washington and has a big year, and
he had 60 points.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is loony.
You mean in Chicago?
In Chicago, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all I got for you. So should we...
Do you want to try to hit 48 questions?
There's probably more than that by now. There was 48 when we started recording. There's going to be more now. But we will hit as many as we can.
Okay.
Let's see what people want to know about today. Alex says, why do you think they didn't trade the first round pick and Gustafson for another forward? Alex wanted them to get another top six forward. Well, Gustafson doesn't make anything, so they don't really have cap space for another top six forward unless they start getting into retention again, and then it starts getting expensive with picks and things. But I think some people wanted them to pick up like someone like Bertuzzi, like the way that Boston did.
I think, though, they were right at the border of doing too much. At a certain point, you're bringing in too many new guys, and there's not that much time left in the year.
Six is a lot, right? It's a lot. I mean, that's one of the things I would be worried about with the Leafs right now is it too many new guys to integrate? Because how many times have you seen a team add six players at the trade deadline? Like, it's very, very rare that a team has this much change.
Yes. And so I think if you're adding more,
I guess if you're trading Gustavsson as part of this, then you still are only adding six, but you know, and fair. It's Eric Duhatchek has a story about why the deadline was so slow on Friday, and it's because all the teams got ahead of it and things like that. And he talked to an anonymous executive with another team, and the executive said, like, you got to be careful not to do too much and not to disrupt your team too much. And like, sometimes teams like change around a lot of things, and it doesn't work because, you know, 20 games isn't enough to get ready for the playoffs with what you change.
Well, so, you know, what's an underrated point about that, James, is a lot of the times it's hard for players. I think it's probably overlooked or whatever the word is. It's hard to change teams in the middle of the year. Like, not everyone comes in and just feels comfortable right away. Like, it can take months. It can take, and so, like, if you're bringing in seven guys, let's say, maybe half of them or like four of the seven don't feel comfortable, and suddenly, like, you've kind of like screwed up your team a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You got to be really careful. And I think the guys that they brought in, like Shen has obviously been around, done this like many times. He'll be fine. McCabe, not so much, but like, he's a veteran. He's older. He's 29. Ryan O'Reilly, same thing, been around. Achari and Lafferty obviously are young. Well, Achari's like 31. But anyway, I guess the point is, like, the guys that they brought in, I don't see that really being a problem. Like, they're not super young guys. They've been around the league.
It's just about finding, like, comfort, though. It's not even about the new guys. It's, in some ways, it's about the guys who have been there, right? And, like, all of a sudden, you're playing with a bunch of people you don't know. And, you know, I think, was it Dubas or Keefe was saying today that, you know, it's good that they're on the road and they can spend some time together and kind of get to know each other a little bit. And you're going to go into battle in the playoffs. You want to at least know who you're battling with.
Yeah. Well, and you know what you end up learning is most of these guys know each other from one way or another anyway. Like, Luke Shen, for example, like, knew Morgan Riley. Like, they spent time together because Morgan Riley was friends with Tyson Barrie, who was a Leaf, and like, Shen and Barrie are friends. You know what I mean? Like, there's just all these connections you forget about, world championships, all those kind of things.
Yeah, I think, didn't O'Reilly say he played internationally with Shen? It must have been a world championship kind of thing. And yeah. I think he knew McCabe too.
Yeah, they played together in Buffalo.
All right, Zachary wants to know, is this year's roster better than last year's heading into the first round? And is it a better match for Tampa? How so specifically? I mean, I think some of like a little bit of the physicality and things like that, potentially. I mean, I think what the Leafs management saw when they're watching their team play against Tampa is just what they were getting from down in their lineup from, you know, the Corey Perrys and Pat Maroon and Nick Paul and Hagel and who am I forgetting? I mean, like, you know, they liked what they
saw. Ross Colton.
Yeah. They liked what they saw from those players, and they want their team to look more like that. So, and the other thing too, is they didn't have Ryan O'Reilly last year. I mean,
it's a big change.
Yeah. So like, who do you subtract from the forward lineup in terms of impact forwards last year?
I'm looking at their game one lineup. So obviously Bunting was hurt. So this was their top six.
Yeah, Bunting had a really tough series too. That doesn't get talked about enough, but he was quite injured when he was playing.
Yes. So their top six was Kerfoot, Matthews, Marner.
Yikes.
KF, Tavares, Kasha.
Yikes.
And then Nylander, Kampf, Engvall.
Yeah, those are all yikes, to be honest. So like, O'Reilly's a huge difference over that. Like, they didn't have another player like that. Like, it was the core four and then not enough support around them. All of a sudden, you had a player who's as good as Ryan O'Reilly, especially as good as Ryan O'Reilly in the playoffs and at playing center. That's a big time game changer over last year.
You know what's interesting, James? So I've spoken to him a little bit. There's like a presence about him, a confidence about him. Like, sometimes you can kind of read a person just by talking to them. Sometimes it doesn't mean anything at all. But you can see why he would just come in and be comfortable. Like, there
I
was
remember
just
when
something
they got Jason Spezza, Jonas, and like, I hadn't interacted
thing.
With Spezza that much.
Me
I remember,
neither.
I remember yeah. in training camp, just as like, this guy is an impressive person, you know?
Yeah. It's very similar actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see that the team sees it too, right? Like, you can see that the Leafs players are feeling it, right? Like, it just feels like there's just the amount of respect they have for him is incredibly high. Steve B asks a similar question. Is the group of defensemen after the trade deadline better than what they had before? A lot of fans think that they subtracted skill and you know, are kind of going down the grit train, you know, like they're subtracting Sandin for Shen. And then when you look at like the RAPM charts and things like that, Shen looks like a mediocre or a bad defenseman and Sandin looks like a good one. So how is this an upgrade?
Again, context, right? Context, well, context.
They're going to want Shen to play, you know, defensive zone draws, penalty kills. You know, he's only going to play, you know, 10 or 12 minutes in different.
Shen was playing like 17 minutes a game in Vancouver, like in their yeah. top four. He's not doing that here. Like,
no,
if he's playing in their top four, he's playing 12 minutes max.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's totally different. And like Sandin, like he excelled in the role that he was given. Like, he deserves credit for that. But that was on a third pair, like playing third and fourth lines, playing a lot in the offensive zone. Like, it's, you have to contextualize it more than just to look at the poster.
Jan or Yan, you'll have to tell me how to pronounce it next time. J-A-N, Jan or Yan, who's a very frequent commenter and question asker. He has three things. So I'm going to, and they're long. So I'm going to try and condense these. He makes a good point. He says, you know, the Leafs wouldn't have been able to fit players like O'Reilly and McCabe under their cap in the offseason, like, let's say if they were going to like sign them or whatever. Is this a new strategy for them to wait till the trade deadline when the cap hits are lower to fix areas of need? Absolutely. You know, like the Leafs maxed out their cap space. They more than maxed it out in the offseason when they signed Yarncroc. They were over the cap until Muzzin got hurt. They were significantly over. They didn't have room to add anything else. And then, you know, over time, they ended up spending some of the Muzzin money on some of the additions that they made. But in a year where you're not in LTIR, you accrue cap space, and you only have to add the percentage of the contract that's left in the season. So yeah, I mean, that's why you saw so many teams around the league, so many of the contenders loaded up, because they have more flexibility towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
The other thing that Yan says is, do GMs have to build two different teams?
Yes.
One for the regular season and one for the playoffs. That seems to be what the Leafs have done, where, you know, their regular season team got them to here, and then they added a bunch of quote unquote playoff-y guys.
It is 100%. Yes.
And then the other thing he says is, have GMs in win now mode finally realized how pointless it is to hold on to draft picks? You know,
yes.
He brings up draft schmaft. Cliff Fletcher always got criticized for draft schmaft, and like that was kind of like a saying that was used against him for years, you know, especially when, you know, there were the lean years where the Leafs didn't have a lot of good prospects and things like that. But, you know, Cliff Fletcher was a smart executive. You know, I think what he meant by that
James,
is
James, can I stop you on that point?
Yeah.
I was really upset at myself that I did not include this in my Luke Shen story. He was the GM who drafted Luke Shen. Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
I think he was the interim GM at that point, and he traded up to get Shen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow, what a world.
That was like right around when I started covering the team. Cliff Fletcher was the GM. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it was Shayna that wrote a story about the value of draft picks that I recommend people go back and read. That was a few days ago, and it was just like, you know, the draft picks, especially once you get past like the top 10 or the top 15, are worth a lot less than you think.
Well, and they still hold this like cachet value for teams to be like, we got a first round pick, even though it's like 28th.
Well, they did get a first round pick.
They did, but it's like it probably is going to be not very much. Although, like, good drafting teams might luck out.
Shawl would like to know, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Sorry if I get your names wrong. I'm doing my best. Shawl would like to know, What would your game one line combo? We already talked about the defense, so I'm not going to get into that. But what would your game one line combos look like versus Tampa, assuming Toronto gets home ice? What would you do for game one, Jonas?
Well, I would
I like O'Reilly in the top six. I think he's too good to put on the third line center.
I'm there as well. And I kind of think I might play Marner with those guys as well.
Mm.
But we'll see. We'll see how this goes down the stretch with Matthews and Marner back together. And then the rest of the lineup.
It seems like Matthews needs
out.
Marner right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, like he needs his playmaking, obviously. Like Nylander can really pass the puck, but he's become such a great shooter, right? Like that the dynamic is just a little bit different with Marner. Like in Marner, his passing right now is just like,
yeah,
he's been on an unreal level the last like month.
They need Marner to be like that in the playoffs, like in the key games. Like we've seen him have some good playoff games, but they really need, like, he can just dominate games. They need him to dominate some of these games against Tampa.
Well, the one series he was just awesome was that Boston series. Mm. And that he played exactly like you're talking about. He played, like, to use like one of the
Didn't
lines,
have
like
him on
I
the
remember
third line though at that point. Like, wasn't he like,
yes,
he was, wasn't he with Bozak and JVR? Is that right? It was the first,
yes,
Boston, the 2018, right?
But I think it was like a mentality. Like he's talked about like playing free. Mm-hmm. And he looked like that in that series. Like he didn't look burdened by everything.
I remember Fluto, our Boston writer, wrote about Marner after the series and how the Bruins players were all like, wow, that guy is good, basically. And I mean, he was like a kid back then. Like how old was Marner? Like 22, 21 years old in that series. And you're right, he was really good, but he was playing, you know, down the lineup. So it's a little bit of a, but he's a different player now than he was then too. I mean, look how good Marner is now.
Yeah, he's a top 10-ish player in the league. Now, let me double check to see if that's right. So that was 18, actually. So he had 9 points in 7 games. And you're right. He was on the line with Bozak and Van Riemsdyk, I think. I'm just double checking. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just scrolling through my Excel data.
I like Jonas. Jonas has this crazy Excel doc that has line combos for every game the Leafs have ever played since in the, like, 18 years he's covered them or whatever. It's really quite a thing. So you can always
say,
I'm Jonas,
glad I
like,
checked,
oh,
James.
Yeah. Am I wrong? What the lineup was?
Yeah. He was actually playing on their second line.
Mm, okay.
He was playing with, wow,
for the whole series or the start of the series or what?
The whole series. So there was obviously a Kadri suspension in there.
Oh yeah. Right.
But he started that series playing with Kadri and Marlowe, and then Kadri and Marlowe became Plekanec and Marlowe. So,
oh my goodness.
Anything's possible.
Wasn't that the second Boston series, though? Are you looking at the wrong year?
I'm looking at 18.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy wants to know, how is this team going to keep all 9 defensemen engaged down the stretch? Well, I don't know. I think Timmins is going to be engaged with spending a lot of time in the press box. So they got to worry about keeping 8 guys engaged, basically. Do you think they'll do some load management with, like, Brody or Giordano? Like, do you think they might miss some back-to-back games or something like that?
I don't know. Like, Giordano seems so against sitting, and Sheldon Keefe seems to have leaving it. That's not a word. Left it up to him. So I don't know what they do. That's the only, not the only, but like, that's a downside of having all these guys around. It's like, how are you supposed to do this? Like, what are you going to sit Liljegren a bunch? I guess it's possible. Like, Justin Hall's played better the last couple of games. Are you going to sit him now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of creates some dynamics that aren't great, especially when you need to try to build pairs and build continuity and build some familiarity with some of these new guys. So that's the only thing that kind of worries me a little bit.
Let's, Jonas, we still got a bunch more questions. Let's take another quick break and we'll get into a few more things and wrap it up after that.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right. Here we go. This is interesting. So this is the question comes from But My Gut Says is the name.
Wow.
His question is this trade deadline an admission by Dubas that he was wrong about small skilled players being a market inefficiency? Well, I mean, the Leafs have been pursuing players like this for a while, just not to the degree that they have here, right? Like the Nick Foligno debacle.
I think he's actually on to something.
You think he's on to something in what sense?
I think that there has been, I've talked about this with you, I've written about this. Yeah, I think he's evolved. I think Kyle Dubas kind of came in and went along those lines of like, it doesn't matter how big you are, like if you can think the game and if you can make a play and if you can have skill. And I think what he's seen through experience and what's happened to his teams is like that. That doesn't really work in the playoffs. Like the playoffs are different. Like it's great if you have skill, but like I'm looking back at some of their fourth lines, like in his early times, so like 19, like you can't play Tyler Ennis on your fourth line in the playoff series and win. Like you know what I mean? Like you're
Seth Griffith and Mark Arcabello. And how many of these guys can we name that?
It doesn't work. Like they have, and now like they've hit on guys who are smaller and can play and be in those situations. Like they had Trevor Moore, who is a guy that they found and is now a really good player in LA, and he's not that big, but like he plays with a certain scrappiness and he's quick. And like
wasn't Trevor Moore the guy who didn't Babcock say he has a big rear end or something like that? That was like,
yeah, that was right.
Like he's not a big guy, but he's got a big rear or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think it's been an evolution. Like they have realized that certain things that
I wonder if Jonas, like, don't work. Everyone makes it like an analytics thing or a non-analytics thing. I wonder if the data that they're using has evolved and changed. And like part of what the numbers say is that you don't think so?
I don't think we need to make everything like a debate about like eye test versus analytics. Like sometimes it's just like there are different elements that you need, and like, you can look at just what we were talking about before. Like you could look at the analytics of Rasmus Sandin and say, like, of course he has to play. But then you watch him in certain situations against really good teams and against teams in the postseason. It's like, it's different. Like he's not going to be able to survive in those types of games. You know what I mean? Like some stuff is just beyond, I guess that's eye test, but like, I don't know why everything has to be like an argument between the two things. Like,
let me elaborate on what I meant. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, like the stats community has been looking at, you know, like Corsi used to be very predictive of wins and performance. If you go back like 7 or 8 years ago when we started, well, probably even before that, we started talking about it. But remember when there was like all the Corsi debates like 10 years ago about the Leafs and PDO and all that stuff? Like, it's hard to, it's been like a decade since all of that. But the interesting thing is that Corsi, which is, for people that don't know, is shot attempts, basically shot attempt share. Of course, he's become less predictive over time. You know, it basically, the league is changing, really. And like the stats that are most relevant or most predictive. And that's why we talk about expected goals and we talk about scoring chance share. And because shot quality has become more and more important. And I think teams have started to chase shot quality more. And I think some of the players that might not be, I mean, I don't know. I haven't investigated this that thoroughly, but you know, like some of these like hard to play against playoff type players we're talking about are, they're more like get to the net and it's not pretty, but you're getting higher quality opportunities, kind of like Zach Hyman used to do.
Well, like an example for me, James, that comes to mind is like Lyubushkin last year. If you looked at his analytics in Arizona, they're terrible. If you looked at some of the defensive numbers, like they were a little bit better, but it's like he's playing on a terrible team. Of course, isn't like that stuff is going to be awful. And you stick him into a team like this with all that skill where he doesn't have to do as much, he doesn't have to play as many minutes, he's got so much help around him, and maybe he can be fine.
But I just wonder if, like, maybe the Leafs, like, as they've, you know, Kyle Dubas said today, he's been part of the organization for, what, like, 9 years. I'm sure part of the evolution has been the data that they use and the way that they look at the sport and the way that the NHL is changing. And, like, we don't know, but I'm sure that, like, the things that they're valuing, I know, like, for other teams around the league, it's changing what they're looking at. And there's new data now that, I don't know. It's an interesting, like, some people think, like, oh, has he given up on analytics? I don't think so. What's changed is, like, some of the way that they're looking at the game using analytics.
Well, you can't just, like, if you're just literally just looking at the numbers and just picking players based off the numbers, like, you can't do that. That doesn't work.
Well, it depends on what your numbers, like, are, I guess, Jonas. Like, if your numbers
are infallible, if your numbers are perfect,
then you can do that.
But there's no such thing. And I don't understand why this is like this in hockey, where it's like if you use numbers, you can't look at the game. And if you look at the game, you can't use numbers. Like, the point is just to enhance everything that you know and try to get more data, whether it's with what you see with your eyes or whether it's numbers. It's all just like supposed to support each other. It's not supposed to be one or the other. I don't understand it sometimes here.
Michael wants to know, and we got five more minutes, Jonas. Michael wants to know, what are your major concerns, if any, following the trade deadline, or are the Leafs all set? I mean, I think they're probably about as set as they could be. Perfect world, if there's no salary cap, you probably want another experienced goaltender and another top six forward, but, you know, you can't get everything, you know, and I mean, my concern, you know what my number one concern is, Jonas? I don't know if it's not about the roster. Can you guess what my number one concern is?
The referees.
I know. Although I'm sure some fans. My number one concern is the Boston Bruins look like they're not going to be able to be beat.
I've seen enough sports, James, to know that just because you're amazing in the regular season does not mean you're just going to be.
Could be.
It might very well be true, but it often the case is when you're amazing in the regular season, like, you can be beat.
It's just the road is, like, so hard. Like, it's just, you got to beat two, like, of the best franchises in this era of the sport.
I know, but if you're Boston, you're not enthused to play one of Tampa or Boston or Tampa or Toronto in the second round.
It's but Boston's going to get a relatively easy matchup in the first round at least, right? Like,
That doesn't make the second round any easier, does it?
Well, if you can get through in five games or something, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
The Leafs are going to be like, if you get through Tampa, like, you know, you might be missing a couple guys or anyway, like, it's, maybe I'm wrong. So, like, what would be your major concern? I mean, goaltending's the obvious one.
Goaltending is the biggest one far and away. Far, far, far and away.
Actually, I just remember, Jonas, we didn't finish answering the previous question about what our lineup would be. We only did the first two lines.
Yeah, but the bottom six, I said, like, the bottom six is pretty clear cut. Like, there's not a
Kampf,
really, like,
Kampf with Kerfoot and
Yarncrook.
Right.
And then Achari, Lafferty, Aston Reese.
Nice little greasy goal that Yarncrook got against Calgary, eh?
That was a greasy goal.
I was talking to Aaron, one of our editors, and he's like, that was a playoff like goal.
Yeah, I asked Kyle Dubas about that, those playoff-type goals. He still kind of bristles at the idea of a playoff-style goal while also acknowledging playoff-style goals.
Anything other than goaltending that worries you about going into the playoffs? I mean, some of we talked about kind of like trying to figure out what the D-pairs are and things like that.
You know what would I don't know, scare me if I were them is like, and Kyle Dubas kind of talked about this today, is like, it's a sport of, like, there's lots of luck to it. And they could play an awesome series and they could still lose. They could play an awesome series and Vasilevsky is just unbelievable and they lose.
It's a 50-50 series again, Jonas. Like, it's the same as last year. Like, look how close last year was.
Yeah, by a goal, by a shot.
You know, the goal was disallowed and, like, maybe that game's different if that Tavares goal counts and, you know, where they called the penalty on Justin Hall. Or maybe, like, Kerfoot doesn't pizza the puck away in game six and, like, things are different. But my gut is back again with another question. He says, was Dubas actively looking for another winger to play with O'Reilly on the third line, or was he content with what he had? Could he have gotten a winger for the first round pick? I'm sure they were poking around and seeing what they could have done, but I honestly, Tyler Bertuzzi went to Boston, right? So, like, I think people are looking at, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, he made 4.5 and I guess 50%.
They would have had to trade Kerfoot out. They would have had to push Kerfoot out in a deal like that.
I mean, that's why I hate all in as like a thing. Like all in is whatever you decide all in is like that. They could have moved another first round pick. You know what I mean? Like they could have, there's a million things you could do. You could trade Matthew Nyes.
Well, we probably should mention Matthew Nyes. They left enough cap space. They at least have about $845,000, $850,000. And so that's what the contract for Matthew Nyes is going to be. And he can be available, you know, as soon as late March or I think April 10th is the end of the NCAA championship. So somewhere in that window, he's going to get a chance. If you're the Leafs, would you play Nyes in all of the regular season games when he signed?
I mean, when would he sign? How many games will there be left?
Well, I just said we don't know. Like, it's either going to be the end of March or it's going to be... there's a window there where, you know, it could be between... when's their season end? Like, April 14th?
13th.
So it's going to be between... I'm just doing off the top of my head. It's between, like... it'll be between, like, 2 or 3 and 8 games, something like that. That's, like, the... that's how many there are.
I guess we'll see. We'll see where they're at. Like, if they're playing really well.
Going to do one more here. Michael wants to know, Ottawa seemed to steal Jacob Chychrun with the trade that they made. Could the Leafs have not done that deal? What do you think? Do you think they should have been on Chychrun? I think they wanted a defenseman who was more in the style of McCabe, really, than Chychrun. That's what they were looking for. And
I agree with that.
I mean, they haven't really commented on him, but I believe they probably felt Chychrun was like similar to some of the elements they already have. Ottawa's pretty excited, though. I don't know if you saw Jonas, like Pierre Dorion's presser today. They're clearly very elated to have him. And I guess he played really well in his Senators debut.
I have seen some things with that franchise. We'll see. Let's see how this goes.
You will withhold judgment. People are getting excited in Ottawa. They've been winning lots of games. Big win over the Rangers.
I thought the rebuild was over 2 years ago, though. Didn't Pierre say it was?
You know who's a really, really good, who I really like watching for Ottawa? Stützle. Is like, that guy. He's going to be a superstar. I think we should probably wrap, Jonas. Thanks to everyone for the questions. There are still a bunch that we didn't get to, but we appreciate you. Thanks on a Friday night. For filling our inbox, and thanks to everyone for listening. We're working on getting some guests. I know we got to have O-Dog on to talk about that amazing commercial. Did you see the thing with the band? And like, O-Dog's such a ham, man. Like he probably could have been an actor in another life.
Yeah,
pretty amazing.
We'll get him on. We'll make it happen at some point, hopefully.
So our requests right now are O-Dog and Brian Hayes. If there are other people you'd like to see us have on the show, let us know on social media or in the comments on the Athletic app.
All right, James. We'll talk next week. There's not a lot of games next week. Just Jersey and Edmonton for the Leafs. So.
Well, it's time for a little bit of a break. There's been a lot going on.
Woo! Talk to you next week, James.